the quality and the equitable access to education in Pakistan is really missing. And it's something that, if improved, could help reduce grievances against the government, could potentially even, we would hypothesize, reduce extremism and militancy.
This is At Brookings, a weekly in-depth look at the issues behind the news. This week, Pakistan's madrasas, teaching radicalism or the three R's.
Children under the age of 17 make up more than half the population of Pakistan, and most of those children have few prospects for a proper education. The government-run school system is failing many of its young people, and Pakistan's Islamic schools, called madrasas, are filling that gap. Some observers say these schools teach radicalism and plant seeds of violence and hatred, especially against Western powers. In a new report, Beyond Madrasas, Senior Fellow Rebecca Winthrop examines the complexities of the issue.
Rebecca, madrasas are Islamic-themed schools that we see a lot of in Pakistan, which you say are largely mischaracterized. People tend to think that it's the number one school of choice in Pakistan, and that all these schools do is foment extremist thought. Can you clear that up for us, please?
The truth is that really a very small percentage of full-time students, everyone agrees it's well below 10%. Some people say 1%. The World Bank estimates, the government of Pakistan says 4% of all full-time students are actually enrolled in these religious schools, in madrasas. So the numbers are small. And of those, madrasas are really mixed. There's madrasas that are not radicalizing students, that have a whole range of different types of curriculum, even teach English.
But some of these schools do, in fact, promote extremism. But you're saying that not all extremist thought begins in madrasas.
There are a number of hardline militant madrasas, which I don't want to minimize, that are serious security concerns, because there's a very direct relationship between those hardline madrasas and militancy. There's big questions about where they're getting their money and their funding from. That said, there's really good data that shows Pakistani militants, some of them come from madrasas, but not even maybe a majority. A number of them come from universities in Pakistan. So you really have to look at what is being taught in the public education system, what's happening in the sort of, non-religious education system, that this is also a route for militancy.
The educational system in Pakistan is fraught with problems, and in some ways contributes to this whole issue of madrasas and extremist thought.
Schools are one of the most visible and pervasive arms of the government of Pakistan. There's more teachers than military personnel. There's almost, 750,000 public school teachers in the country, and they're in, all over the place. And most of these schools and most of these teachers don't show up to work frequently. There's many schools that are ghost schools that are sort of on the books, and somebody's collecting a paycheck, but nobody's actually showing up to teach their children. And as a result, there's been a massive increase in private schools. Private schools not being religious madrasa, religious seminaries, religious schoolings, but just local community members who can read and write, setting up mom-and-pop shops, trying to fill this vacuum of poor government quality schooling.
Okay, so the educational system in Pakistan is broken, so this must have a profound effect on young people and limit the opportunities they have to make their own way in life.
Youth are very disgruntled. If they actually manage to get into any type of education and make it through, they're graduating without the skills they need to get jobs, because the quality of education is so poor and it's not aligned with the areas of growth. There's also huge inequities in education. So you have the rich fifth of the country, only about 9% of the richest fifth of the population experience something that's called education poverty, which really means they have less than 4 years of schooling. And you compare that to the poorest fifth of the population, almost 70%, 68% live in education poverty, so virtually have very hardly any access to education.
Well, Rebecca, how can education, the three R's, I guess, is what we're talking about here, really help to tamp down any feelings of hatred or extremism or radicalism.
We know that conflict risk can be reduced by increasing education. We know that increasing access to education by 10% reduces the risk of any country to conflict by about 3%. So the more a country, especially a poor country that has instability, has very low levels of enrollment, especially male secondary enrollment, so young men, as you can imagine, out of school, the higher risk it is of falling into conflict.
Well, Rebecca, if education is part of the solution and the other parts seem to be missing or at least at play, then what lies ahead? What's the future?
Half of all the people living in Pakistan are below the age of 17, which is an astounding demographic. Pakistan is a nation of young people. And if we don't find a way, certainly starting now and thinking over the next, you know, medium to short term, 5-10 years, to actively engage this young, this, you know, half the country, then I'm really going to worry about the security and stability of the country as a whole. Education alone is not going to solve the problem. Education is one factor amongst many factors.
Rebecca, thank you so much for your time here today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for joining us. I'm Gigi Hinton. We'll see you next week at Brookings.
At Brookings is produced by the Brookings Institution. To learn more about the issues discussed on At Brookings, visit our website at brookings.edu.